The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Come to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. And we do have a lot of breaking news that is coming into us, including Seattle Police. See, we told you yesterday that Jenny Durkin said only 1%, just 1%, aren't facts going to get vaccinated. And we told you those were bogus numbers. And they were. And I don't know why and how she tried to pull that scam on the media and on the public, because they have 103 sworn and civilian Seattle police who have submitted their exemption requests, and they're going to get turned down. We already know that. And so what that really means is that we're up to 9.4%. of the Seattle police force, already 200 officers down from all of the nonsense they had to put up with over the last year. And now 9.4 of what's left gone because of this vaccine mandate. In a city at a time where we have record numbers of murders, shootings, car prowls, property crimes, it is really something. And then we're also going to have some public safety gaps on the side of fire and safety. Let's get right to our big lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
And joining us live is Andrew Pittman, a Seattle firefighter who just lost his job. Andrew, thank you for coming on with me today.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, and is that accurate? Are you pending some exemption hearing, or were you fired as of today?
I have not been officially terminated. I have been taking off of the staffing matrix and put on an administrative detail, I guess you'd say. But there's nothing that says I'm terminated, but I've packed my gear and have no faith in their ability to reasonably accommodate me based on their kind of their discussions with other members that have gone before me.
So what numbers are you hearing of all your brothers and sisters in the same boat as you? How many firefighters are we going to lose?
So I heard today that there was about 150 that are not in the operations companies, but most of those, not most of those, a number of those will be readmitted because they were kind of standing in solidarity with us. And so maybe they're have been vaccinated for months and just didn't want to play this game.
Okay.
My best guess would be at least 100 will retire or no longer be employed in one fashion or another.
And so your reason for not being vaccinated is what?
I just have strong moral and philosophical convictions against taking this shot, and that, you know, I've seen enough injury close to home as a result of the shot, and that we have a reasonably sound body that can fight this. We've already had COVID go through our family, so they are not offering any exemptions for natural immunity. I mean, I can go on for a while on it, but at the end of the day, they just don't want to hear anything other than get the shot, retire, resign.
Isn't it amazing, Andrew? The words you just said, you have strong moral and philosophical convictions against it. Can you believe in the United States of America, public servants are getting fired for strong moral and philosophical convictions? I mean, this is incredible to me, but we've slowly been moving in this direction. But now I think people realize what happens when we keep moving in that direction.
It's just mind blowing for me and my family. And, you know, I've got a lot of really good friends that are vaccinated and they're staying behind and they just can't make any sense of it either. And that's one of the big travesties is it's just splitting people right down the middle. You know, in the fire service as well as police, we're very much a family and we support each other. We go through some very harrowing things together. And we all understand, like, there's a lot of implications. We've lost brothers and sisters to COVID in the fire service, some that have been not vaccinated. And, you know, there's plenty of stories on both sides. But all we want is a reasonable discussion with our administration, and that is absolutely not what's happening. And it's causing a lot of stress on members that are, you know, for us, we're gone. Like, I just count my blessings I have something to fall back on, and that there's a lot of folks left behind that just don't have any faith in their administration because of their lack of logical reasoning.
Yeah, I understand that. In fact, since you brought up your administration, my friend Brandy Cruz at Fox 13, she just spoke with Fire Chief Scoggins. And I have not heard the sound, but we're just getting this in, Andrew. But you and I will hear it at the same time together. And it's a little long, but I want to get your reaction. So here is Fire Chief Scoggins just moments ago.
Do you believe that for the last 20 months they've been out putting the public at risk?
I don't believe our firefighters have been out putting the public at risk because we've done an amazing job at our testing sites, our vaccination sites, running 911 calls. I mean, in September, we ran 7,900 calls. 4,200 were BLS related. Another 1,100 were ALS related. Fire alarms, fires into encampments, into buildings. Our goal is not to put the public at risk. Throughout the entire pandemic, we have had one transmission on a call from a patient to a firefighter. But other than that, we haven't. Inside our stations, which are congregate settings, we have had transmissions where our firefighters live together for 24 hours. And we have had over 400 of our firefighters placed in quarantine and isolation over the last 20 months for COVID. So it's not just the calls out in the field. It's inside of our station houses all the time.
So if, as you said, over 20 months, one transmission, mm-hmm. it was patient to firefighter. Over in Spokane, one of the things they did is they took all the unvaccinated firefighters, rounded them up, and assigned them to a single station. Why not consider doing something like that to keep them in service if the risk is firefighter to firefighter?
Well, I don't know how that plan would work. I would need probably a few more details. But if those firefighters are going out the door and responding to community members after the mayor's directive and the governor's proclamation, if there is a transmission from a whole crew of unvaccinated firefighters, well, I think there's risks involved there.
You just said there's been one transmission in 20 months.
Yes.
And that you don't think your firefighters for the last 20 months have been putting anybody at risk. So
right.
Why would that suddenly change because there's now a vaccine available?
Well, the rules change tomorrow.
The rules change. So there's no actual public health reason for what they are doing to you and your brothers and sisters, Andrew. They're just doing it simply because the rules change. I mean, that's remarkable to me.
It's a crazy time in history, and I probably got to say this as well, as I'm not a spokesperson for the Seattle Fire Department. I totally expect to be fired, so I don't want to bring ill will on the department, and that is my chief, and I signed on in the Seattle Fire Department and took an oath right around the same time he did. I've been at this department just about the same time. And I saw that sounded a little bit ago, and I've never seen him so squirmish in my time in the Seattle Fire Department. And that's telling to me. But, you know, there's a lot to be said about rule changes. We deal with constant changes in our workplace because we're responding to emergencies and we need to keep each other safe. And our workplace is constantly changing because we respond to the environment that we're called to. And I totally understand how things change, but it's been an unreasonable change. And many parts of the department, I feel, have failed to be transparent in this change. And I think that they're just responding in a very distrustful fashion. Like, I know for me that I've had no trust in the last few months in my administration. And I don't think, and it's tough because the rules do change, but if I recall correctly, the state LNI has decided long before COVID that, you know, if I get the flu at work, it's not really a workplace exposure. It's just kind of the nature, like if you get sick at work too, you don't get paid to go home because you got the flu. And when the COVID hit our neck of the woods, they had kind of leaned on that policy and said that, you know, COVID is going to be kind of treated in the same light, understanding that it's not, but that's just kind of the closest relative policy we have to that.
Sure.
And if I remember correctly, I could be wrong, but I believe Chief Scoggins worked with the mayor to work on our behalf. So that way, if we got sick and had to go home, they would allow us to be paid while we were at home. So all of that cost that he's talking about transmissions being costly to the department and incurring costs on the city was something that they decided to be in our best interest and negotiated at the beginning of the pandemic, which was you know, really exemplary of how progressive we are as a fire department to really lead the way and say we're going to take care of our members.
Yeah.
And here we are a short time later saying, nope, hit the road. We're not going to take care of you. Well, and that's
what
really
still
a failure
make
of
it...
responsibility to say, hey, I negotiated this. That's part of the cost I incurred.
Right. And sorry to interrupt, but you look at this from, you know, a big time perspective. You guys, or you men and women, you were out there all of 2020 when 0% of the population was vaccinated, and that was fine to be at full force. But now here we are in October of 2021, 80% of the population is vaccinated, and now we got a fire, 100 firefighters. None of this makes any consistent sense at all to me, Andrew.
No, and there's a lot of data that's been collected within the fire department that that tells a different story, that there's vaccinated members coming in and spreading it to unvaccinated, and they don't want to answer to that, or they kind of make up a new story as they go, because, of course, the rules are changing.
Yeah,
I think one of the telling quotes that tells something is that one of the chiefs had mentioned something to the effect of, there's not enough information to quiet the conspiracy theorist. And I never believed myself to be a conspiracy theorist, but when 2 + 2 stops equaling 4, you start to question your environment. And that's what it feels like is happening to us.
Yeah, these ad hominem attacks that people think that they're going to grow horns and all that. All they're trying to do is silence anybody who has some convictions, and as you said, some faith against this. So real quick, how many kids do you have?
I have 4 kids.
How tough were these conversations with your wife?
They're some of the hardest I've ever had.
Tell me why.
I mean, this isn't just a paycheck for us. This is a way of life. This is our family we're leaving behind. This is the relationships, you know, that we've built. My kids are as much vested in showing up at the fire station as I am. They love these people. This is a calling. You know, I came from a very different background than maybe most people, and I felt a calling to help people. And I worked in the Northgate neighborhood most of my career, and I was able to help people in situations that maybe other people weren't quite aligned to. So it's not just about a paycheck or a good, you know, retirement plan or whatever anybody else on the outside thinks. This is a calling for a huge majority of us. And so to be told that we're unsafe to be in our work environment, that people are afraid of us in the public, I never felt that, man. I show up at an emergency last Saturday on my last shift at work, and those people were so glad that I was there, and I did everything that our policy states that we need to do to be protected against each other and COVID transmission. And that's what people see. They see us wearing masks and gloves and eye protection and doing all the right things. And they trust that we're showing up responsibly to mitigate their hazard.
Yeah.
I mean, the essence of the fire service is to mitigate hazards.
Yeah, now this is incredible. Hey, we only have a few seconds left, Andrew. So a bunch of you dropped your boots on the steps of City Hall this morning, and then tell my listeners what you went and did after that.
We're picking up some plumbing supplies and just trying to focus on the next step in front of us and count our blessings. You know, it was a very surreal and liberating moment for myself and a few other of the folks that were there. I mean, that's where I got you know, sworn into the fire department, was at City Hall.
Sure.
You know, Chief Scoggins and many others were there to say, welcome aboard, and we love and honor you, and that's not what it feels like today. So it was a very emotional time.
Didn't a bunch of you go and cook breakfast for the homeless, too, down Pioneer Square?
Yes, we did. That was just a kind of an organic movement, like, all right, well, this is the final hour for us, and if that's how they want to act, you know, and push us out, then... You know, we still love this city. I still have very much pride in the badge that that I wore down there in my uniform, and we wanted to help people out, and they were very happy.
Hmm. I don't know if we cut off or not there. Andrew, if you can still hear me, God bless you. Thank you for all your service, and know that the vast majority of us appreciate what you and your brothers and sisters have done. So, Andrew Pittman, Seattle firefighter, who's about to be fired, it sounds like. And it sounds like, did he drop off, Sean? Did the call drop for some reason?
Are you there now?
Oh, now I can hear you. Yeah. So, yeah, I was just saying thank you for coming on. God bless you and your family. And, you know, I know the integrity of all these people I've been talking to. I know things will work out, but I'm just sorry you've all been put in this situation.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. All right. Andrew Pittman, Seattle firefighter, about to be fired. This is, first of all, we're losing many of the most experienced cops and firefighters. I've talked to people who were specially trained for the units in which they serve, both police and fire. I've seen most other cities in the country not do what we're doing here. As he mentioned, in Spokane, they are not firing the firefighters who are unvaxxed. Brandy said that. They're just letting them take shifts together, the unvaxxed, and be the family in a firehouse together. Everybody else is making accommodations. This is, make no mistake about this, this is not about public health. If it was about public health, they would have done this when everybody was unvaccinated last year. This is about power and control. And I have never had this kind of power over the lives of a great number of people. And I don't understand why it's so intoxicating. I don't understand why every time Jay Inslee and Jenny Durkin and Dal Constein have talked about this subject the last few days and weeks, why they sound so gleeful. And every, oh, we have great news, 90% are vaccinated. That means thousands are going to be fired. If 10% are unvaccinated, they just sounded so gleeful. And so this is about power and control. It is also about a pharmaceutical industry that has hit record numbers of revenues and profits and wealth for their key board members. And they need to keep expanding the marketplace. And your children are next. And there really is no reason, in my view, for a 5 to 11-year-old to get vaccinated. There's no reason. If you as a parent, if you have a different view, that's fine. But I don't see any reason whatsoever to vaccinate 5 to 12-year-olds. And so, to me, that is nothing but the pharmaceutical companies wanting to get their product injected into our children for the simple reason. The simple reason. But they got to keep the money flowing. And California is already mandating the vax of school kids, public and private. Joe Biden says that he's already purchased, with your and my money, the vaccinations for all of the children in America so they can take care of the kids as well. And so this is where we are now. This is where we are in America, where values, convictions can cost you your job. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We'll check the news for you. I talked to the Washington State Patrol trooper who told Jay Inslee to kiss his, you know what. I'll share some of that with you. We did that a couple of hours ago. And then we have some other news that's coming into us this afternoon. All straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.
It's a great day to be alive. I know the sun's still shining when I close my eyes. There's some hard times in the neighborhood, but why can't every day be just this good?
Big split. There are many musical artists who say that they will only play venues that require proof of vaccination for fans to get in. And then there are guys like this guy, Travis Tritt, the award-winning country music artist, who announced yesterday that he will be canceling a number of upcoming shows because the venues require fans to show proof of COVID vax or submit a negative test. And he said in a statement, I'm putting my money where my mouth is and announcing that any venue or promoter mandating masks, requiring vaccinations, or pushing COVID testing protocols on my fans will not be tolerated. Any show I have booked that discriminates against concertgoers by requiring proof of vax, COVID test, or a mask is being canceled immediately. So he's canceled shows in Muncie, Indiana, Philadelphia, Mississippi, Peoria, Illinois, and Louisville, Kentucky so far. So the split continues among musical artists as to what's the best way for them to make statements on all of this. We've had a busy afternoon. Lots of breaking news this afternoon. As you've heard, Pierce County Sheriff Ed Troyer has now been charged with two misdemeanors by the Attorney General of the state. I've never heard of an Attorney General filing misdemeanor charges. It stems to a January confrontation with a newspaper carrier down in Ed Troyer's neighborhood. And they allege that Troyer made a false statement when he was being interviewed about it, saying that his life had been threatened. It was an encounter. Troyer's been on the job for 37 years. Has never had an accusation of racism, has never had a complaint successfully filed against him or adjudicated against him. And after 37 years now, an incident in January where harsh words were exchanged, apparently, but there was no physical confrontation of any kind. Nobody was injured. Nobody even came close to being hurt. Nobody died. And both parties left. And now the Attorney General wants to end 37 years of service for an elected sheriff. So the Attorney General is trying to overcome the vote, the election. He's trying to de-elect Ed Troyer. And this is the other trend line. So in King County, they've successfully gotten the sheriff's position, only county of 39 in the state where the sheriff will be appointed. Okay, politicians are going to appoint the sheriff, and certainly the sheriff will now have to answer to the politicians instead of to the people. What King County has done is horribly corrosive to having faith in law enforcement, because sheriffs are now just another political lackey for all of this. They're trying to do this. I think it's Thurston County. They've tried to force out the sheriff. In Snohomish County, they've tried to force out the sheriff. Now in Pierce County, they're trying to force out the sheriff. And all of this is to take power away from you and from me, to have a say in who you want to lead your county's sheriff's department. I did talk with Ed Troyer exclusively a couple of hours ago. If you're found guilty of these misdemeanors, does that end your career? Is a misdemeanor a disqualifier for a cop?
Well, I think that's what is possibly going on here, is that's what they want to try and do, because they've already done it to both the King County sheriffs, you know, Urquhart and Ritzy, both, you know, now they're going to an appointed sheriff. And they've tried to do that in Pierce County, but the council didn't have enough votes, so it's not going to an appointed sheriff. They've tried to recall the Snow County sheriff, the Thurston County sheriff, and I think government and people don't want sheriffs, because sheriffs work for the voters and can't promote their agenda. What we do is we make sure people are safe, take care of our employees, and we answer to the voters. And that's why I'm willing to go to the mat on this. When we get a misdemeanor trial, which is going to cost a ton of money for everybody, and I want six citizens that don't have a political agenda to make a decision on what happened. And I also want the voters to decide whether I stay or go. But they're going to try and do everything they can to change that before that happens. Sheriffs are being attacked across the country, and I'm not going to be bullied. I'm built for this. I'm going to take it to the mat, and we'll see what the citizens, the citizens decide. I did say during my election that I'm not going to let King County or Pierce. And I'm sure I made some enemies by doing that, but I'm sticking up for our citizens, I'm sticking up for our deputies and our profession, and I'm willing to take it all the way, because this is targeted, it's about control, and it's about other issues than what happened.
So that's Ed Troyer. He says he's going to fight this to the end, because he thinks it's just politicians trying to de-elect somebody who's rightfully and overwhelmingly, he won by a big margin down in Pierce County. And then another story is Trooper Robert LeMay. Robert LeMay, a few days ago, recorded a video of his last transmission as a Washington State Patrol trooper. And in it, he told Jay Inslee to kiss, you know. But he talked to me, and he talked about the last day on the job. They said, this is the last day you can do what you've been doing for the last 19 months, and you're fired tomorrow. What sense does that make when you've been out there every day for so long?
And we actually approached our agency with that, too. It's like, this makes no sense. I mean, me in particular, I didn't even wear a mask. I mean, it's like, whatever. So I had a gentleman that was actually dying. I pulled from the car, and we were working on him, and it was like, oh, he's got COVID, full-blown COVID, just left the hospital. No effects. I have no issues. I've had fellow employees that have got the stick, and they've had a severe allergic reactions. I've got one guy, he's actually on a heart monitor now, and he's 37 years old. It goes on and on and on. So, no, we approach that. We look, guys, this makes no sense. People that are vaccinated are even getting sick. It's crazy. So, yeah, so it came down to that, and a lot of my coworkers stood together. And at the end of the day, I guess, as of yesterday, so there were 74 that actually were fired. Well, you know, that's not the true story. So the amount of people that actually retired yesterday is added to that. The guys that actually quit prior to this because they had other job offers, which moved them out of state, that's also a number on there too. And the other thing that people don't realize too is most of the guys that have had the vaccination that I've talked to are still leaving. They just took the shot to buy some time. I've talked to a couple of guys that they had 6 weeks left so they could retire. They took the shot just to do that. I got one young troop that was considering taking it because the other PD couldn't pick him up till November, and he's got a brand new wife, or a brand new child, and his wife. So there's a lot of guys that had to make that hard choice just to keep, sure, you know, money and food on the table, because Lord knows everything's going up around here because he loves to tax everything. That's the predicament. So, you know, ask that same question around December, January. You know, you're going to see a lot of numbers. And again, that's just troopers. We're not talking, you know, other people. Yeah. I'm currently on a job site and talking to those guys. The union guys are telling me the same thing. Concrete guys are walking out. Truck drivers, they don't have enough truck drivers anymore because they're done. It goes on and on and on.
And then at the end of the interview, I did ask him if he wanted to use my platform for anything else. I know that Jay Inslee is a huge fan of my radio show, and if he happens to be listening right now, do you have one final message for the governor?
Yeah. Hey, Jay, you can kiss my ass.
Beep. I believed it. All right. Take a quick time out. And then we will count down our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio next. It's the Dory Monson Show. Rolls up. And down the stretch we come. What a day. What a show. What a day. Studio audience, if you enjoyed today's show,
let's go, Brandon!
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 All right. I got to do my awesome audio of the day. You don't want to miss any of this. We'll start with White House spokesperson Jen Psaki. Because, you know, Joe Biden said, if you make under $400,000 a year, your taxes will not go up one penny. But he's proposing a massive carbon tax that would be passed along to consumers that would hit, you know, the working class, the lower class, the middle class, the hardest. Jen Psaki was asked, does she really believe there's a carbon tax that, you know, Joe Biden believes wouldn't affect the lower income?
Does he believe it's possible to design a carbon tax that would not violate his 400,000 and below no taxes on people who earn 4,000?
Yes, I think you and I have had this conversation before. I'm having a flashback. He does. While it wasn't his idea, he does, and there's ample precedent for that in terms of what's in the infrastructure bill.
There's no such thing as a tax on corporations that they don't pass some of it along, or all of it along, to their consumers. There's no such thing. And that's where we have people who are in economic fantasy land right now. She was also asked about the supply chain disruption, and I guess she thinks it's funny.
Supply chains across the world have been disrupted. Even as the sort of work to fight back against COVID proceeded, it was crystal clear that things were not improving on supply chain. People couldn't get dishwashers and and furniture and treadmills delivered on time, not to mention all sorts of other things. So why
the
is it...
The tragedy of the treadmill that's delayed.
Right, the treadmill.
Okay, I guess being snide about it. But man, my wife was at Costco yesterday. She couldn't believe how many shelves were empty. She said it's really eerie to see. And then we have to wear masks as we're walking in and out of restaurants. You can take them off while you're sitting at the table eating and drinking. But Joe Biden was seen walking out of a restaurant and he didn't wear a mask.
There is a mask requirement inside D.C. restaurants, yet President Biden and the First Lady were not wearing masks while walking around a D.C. restaurant on Saturday. Why?
Well, I think what we were referring to is a photo of them walking out of a restaurant after they had eaten, masks in hand, where they had not yet put them back on yet. So I would say, of course, there are moments when we all don't put masks back on as quickly as we should.
It was not just exiting the restaurant, though. He was walking through the restaurant with no mask on. There is a carve-out for people under two or people who are actively eating or drinking. So I'm just curious why the president was doing this.
I think I just addressed it, Peter. Okay.
Because what is right for thee is not right for me. And then finally, Katie Couric, she's written a new book, and kind of one of the blockbusters in it was that she interviewed Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg was very critical of Colin Kaepernick and others who kneel for the national anthem. And Katie Couric admits she edited that out of the interview because of how it would make Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the lion of the left, look to her followers. And so Katie just changed the news, a so-called journalist. And they asked her about that on the Today Show.
I think what people don't realize is we make editorial decisions like that all the time. And I chose to talk about this and put it in the book for a discussion. I mentioned that it was a conundrum that I asked Justice Ginsburg about Colin Kaepernick and taking a knee and how she felt about that. And I did include the fact that she said it was dumb and disrespectful. It was stupid and arrogant, and quite a bit of what she said. There was another line that I thought was, I wasn't sure what she meant exactly, and I thought it was subject to interpretation. What I wish I had done is asked a follow-up to clarify, or just run it and let her clarify it later. But I think that the most pertinent and direct response to the question about Colin Kaepernick, I included. And that's why I raised it, because maybe I should have done the other sentence as well.
Let me push you on it a little bit, because she did make those comments. You said in the book that you wanted to protect her.
Yeah.
So that's not an occasion where you're using that objectivity that's so important to us journalists. And,
yeah.
And the question is whether that undermines journalism at a time when reporters are under attack for bias like that.
You know, I think Justice Brandeis says sunshine is the best disinfectant. And I think the more we can be transparent about the decisions we make, and the more we can say, maybe that wasn't the right one.
Do you think
the better off we were?
Now that you look at it in the
light
of day?
Yeah, I think I think I should have included it. But I also think it's really important to look at what I did include.
In other words, for most in the media, they will attack the politicians they want to destroy, and they will offer a protection racket for the politicians who think like them. And that's not what journalism's all about. All right, I got to get out of here. The Tom and Curly Show is coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times, and I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon! Hello.
Okay, that's it, people. Show's over. Nothing to see here.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.